good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 264. And from the Platte River Valley, from Columbus, SCOTUS, it is Mike Vuncannon, the head boys basketball coach at Columbus SCOTUS High School here in Nebraska. But before we bring on Coach Vuncannon, we, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, COSAC Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coaches, if you have an athlete who is, or even yourself, if you're struggling with balanced neck, spinal issues, all that type of stuff, have them go see COSAC Chiropractic. Go check out their practice, cosacchiro.com. Follow us on Twitter, at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, iTunes, Spotify, first of all, subscribe. Second of all, like this, give us 5 stars, all of that fun stuff. Helps us move up in the rankings. When people look up coaching basketball podcasts, it helps bring in people. So, you know, help us do that. Get that done here, if you would. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out apenandanapkin.com. A lot of really, really good coaching resources on the website there. A lot of good stuff there for you to check out. Enough of that stuff. Let's get to the fun stuff. Let's get to the reason why we're here. And the reason we are here on this snowy Saturday morning. Winter has finally hit in Nebraska here in February. And we have Coach Vuncannon on the other end of the line. Coach, how are you doing this morning?
Warm. It's all good.
Good. Coach is a SCOTUS lifer. He's been there a long time. We'll dive into that here as we go through things. But I'm going to let Coach kind of tell his story here. So Mike, for folks that don't know about you, don't know about your basketball journey, tell us, you know, kind of every step of the way here, how you ended up to be the head man at Columbus SCOTUS.
Hope you don't have a time limit on your podcast.
Nope, we got plenty of memory here.
I was born and raised in Iowa. I played baseball at Simpson College in Indianola. We were in the old Iowa Conference.
Where at in Iowa did you grow up?
Storm Lake. So.
Oh, you were a tornado? I was an ORAB.
What year did you graduate?
92.
Okay, I was 87, so I graduated the same year as the Brands brothers.
Oh, yes, Tom and Terry. Funny side note, Tom and Terry Brands, they were my flag football coaches when I was in sixth grade, and I was a quarterback on our little team, and we played on Saturday mornings and that type of thing. And most of the time, most Saturday mornings, and for the folks that you don't know who Tom and Terry Brands are, they're both Olympic gold medalist wrestlers. They're from my little hometown of 5,000 people. Tom is the head coach at the University of Iowa. Terry is basically his, you know, co-head coaches at the University of Iowa, one of the most storied programs in the country. My best friend Moose, his brother Russell, was best friends with Tom and Terry in high school. They're still really close to this day. But Tom and Terry were our flag football coaches. But we ended up coaching ourselves most of the time, Mike, because Tom and Terry, 5 minutes into every game, they start arguing with each other what they were going to do, what we're not going to do. And so we'd end up having to coach ourselves most of the time with our little team there because those guys were getting after each other so much. So, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
That's all good. Let's see. So I played baseball at Simpson College, taught for a couple of years in Norwalk, Iowa. The position got eliminated, ended up in Nebraska. So I'm in Columbus, Nebraska, 1996. My father-in-law plays cards at the Pawnee, which is an establishment just down here across the street from the football stadium.
A watering hole, yes.
Yep, with the Pitts brothers. Gary Pitts was the athletic director at the time, and they got to talking while they were playing cards, and I ended up I started coaching junior high basketball in 1996 in Merlin Lom's program, and I've been there ever since. I was in the golf business, so wintertime, I had plenty of time to devote to basketball, and so I coached junior high basketball from 96 until about 2008. When Jeff Onutka took over and he asked me to be a bigger part of the program, and I was an assistant for him, and then I've just been a SCOTUS the whole time.
When one of our newest category in the interview series here, from my friend Karen Self out in Phoenix, Arizona, your first a pen and a napkin moment. When was the first time, Mike, that you remember drawing up the X's and O's on a piece of paper or a napkin or whatever it may be? When did you first kind of get sucked in by the game and thinking of it from a coach's perspective that you remember?
Probably about 2008. It was probably before that. So when I first got to SCOTUS, obviously John Peterson was the basketball coach, and I got to watch his practices, and I was, you know, that was, he had some great teams in the late 90s. And I remember standing in the gym watching his girls go through press break, all sorts of different press breaks, and then right into flex. I mean, it was seamless, and it was almost like Coach Peterson had all these girls on a Sony PlayStation controller. I mean, it was just beautiful to watch. And that's when I pretty much got sucked in. I was, you know, I always loved basketball, and the X's and the O's were always a lot of fun, but probably that was when I got hooked.
Mm-hmm. You took it to that next level. You know, you bought into it and realized that there was more to it than what you had believed before. Is that kind of what you're saying? Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of those folks there at SCOTUS that you've worked with over the years. And yet, you know, for folks that don't know who John Peterson is, if you're in Nebraska, you know who Coach Peterson is. He's a great guy, first and foremost, just a great guy. But won three, I think, state championships in girls basketball. Won about 100 volleyball state championships, you know, just incredible, incredible volleyball coach, just all around, just did a little bit of everything. What was it like, being around John Peterson on a daily basis in that regard? What'd you learn from John?
Organization, his practices were down to the second. I mean, it was, that was probably the biggest thing. He got a lot accomplished in, his practice times. And, you know, the press break that we run today is his press break. So, it works against any press. It doesn't matter what kind of press. It works. And that was probably one of the things that has stuck with me since I've been at SCOTUS.
Mm-hmm. How about, you get a chance to work with Jared Ryder too, who's a really good basketball coach as well on the girls' side. What about Jared?
Jared and I have become very, very close. You know, I was in the boys program. I took a year off, and then his first assistant, Wade Coulter, went to Lincoln Lutheran, and you know, we kind of talked to each other about it. Became his assistant, which is where I got to spend the most time with Coach Peterson, because John Peterson was kind of a volunteer assistant at that point, and Jared and I have a lot of fun bouncing ideas off, and still do bounce ideas off each other every day.
Mm-hmm.
That year I spent with the girls program was, that was the year right after COVID. That made me a way better coach. Coaching girls is a lot different than coaching boys. So
mm-hmm.
It made me a better coach.
How did it in that way, Mike?
So, you know, I'm kind of an old school guy. You know, for whatever it's worth, I'm a kind of a, I love Bobby Knight. I grew up watching Bobby Knight coach. So I guess that authoritative kind of style is where I gravitated, as kind of the coach my father was. But as you evolve and as kids evolve, you know, I started coaching girls, and I figured out, you know, there's a different way. You know, girls don't react to yelling very well. But they still want to learn, and they're still there. They probably are better learners than guys. And it made me figure out different ways to get our point across, you mm-hmm. know, without being harsh.
What about your dad?
Believe it or not, my dad was a wrestling coach. I grew up being a wrestler, and some things happened during his career that drove me away from that sport. And but he was a four sport coach. You know, he was an assistant football coach, he was a wrestling coach, he was an assistant golf coach, And then he was an assistant baseball coach in the summer in Iowa. So
yeah,
pretty much coached everything. The thing that I learned the most from my father, he was a relationship guy. And sorry.
Yeah, no. Hey, man, it's real. I lost my mom 29 years ago, and it still hits you every once in a while. So don't worry about it. You know.
He had a knack for having relationships with the kids, and that's what I remember about him.
Mm-hmm. How about John? I hope I'm saying this right. John Sirianni.
Sirianni. Yeah. Yep. He was my baseball coach since in college. He grew up in Des Moines. He was an Italian guy from the south side of Des Moines, went to Des Moines Lincoln.
Okay.
And he was a great baseball coach, better man. Cause I wasn't a great kid in college.
not many of us are, you know.
I made some poor choices in college, Marty. And this guy stuck with me the whole time and made me a better person. And he's a big part of that. But the way he coached baseball, his attention to detail was just phenomenal. We worked first and third situations till the cows came home at Simpson. So, I mean, it was just an awesome coach.
Most dangerous situation in the game for both teams, first and third and less than two outs, right? Yep. Here's another. I hope I don't butcher the pronunciation here. Jeff Anutka? Anutka, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Jeff?
Jeff was the biggest reason that I'm in the position I am in today. Jeff came to SCOTUS from Cedar Catholic up in Hardicton, where he was very, very successful. He had some great basketball teams at Cedar, but never made it to the state tournament. Played in a really difficult mid-states conference at that time. And back in that day, you know, that was pre-wild card. So, yep. You know, he had some really tough teams in sub-districts year in and year out and had a couple undefeated teams lose the game to go to state. So, anyways, he came here to SCOTUS, and he went from the mid-states to the Centennial. So he knew all about how tough conferences work.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tried to start patterning the boys program here at SCOTUS after GICC. Coach Gavers was one of those guys that we really looked up to as far as man-to-man defense and just mental toughness and that kind of basketball. So he asked me to be part of his staff, and I started as a volunteer deal, and it just kind of grew from there. And you know, at that time, that's when I started having kids, and then you start coaching littles, and
yep.
That leads into a whole nother deal on the podcast. You know, I think you start building your program with the youth of your schools, I think.
Well, especially in your smaller communities, you know, so, you know, it's different. I mean, you try to do that to a degree here in Omaha. There are programs that are able to do that and do that. But just by the general dynamics of a larger city, it's a little bit harder to have those, you know, those youth programs. But in a Columbus, in a Norfolk, in a Gothenburg, in an Alliance, that's the heart and soul of your program.
And that's where it started for us. My oldest son's class was very, very talented, and I was blessed to be able to work with them as they were coming up from sixth, seventh, eighth grade on. And that's, you know, I started coaching the junior high kids, the same things that the varsity was working on, you know, with their program. So that's where you build that culture, and that's where you teach kids how to play the actually play the game.
Yeah. That alignment. I mean, how I just can't emphasize enough. If you're going to have a youth program, yeah, and there's certain things that are universal, you know, pivoting this, that, and the other, you know, but having that alignment, it's so, so vital. It just helps streamline everything. And you got to have people at the lower levels that are willing to set aside their own pride, their own thought process, if you will, and say, okay, I may not completely agree with how Coach Mike wants this done, but this is what's going to be best for the program, and I've got to do it this way. And I just don't think there's any other way that you can do it, Mike.
Not at our level. Class C is so competitive, and you are, you know, Class C is lots of smaller schools. Class A and Class B is a different animal. You get into Lincoln and Omaha and club sports are just out of control. And so Class A and Class B, it's different. That's way different.
Yeah.
You have Class C, mostly communities. A lot of these kids are with you from the time that they pick up a basketball and you start showing them fundamentals. They're with you until they graduate their senior year. And that's what makes coaching in Class C and smaller communities special.
Yep. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have 2 smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressured defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have 2 designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. 3 coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring 4 or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. You referenced it a little bit earlier. You talked about tough conferences, and you guys are in one of the best, one of the toughest conferences in the state, arguably all around. You, that Centennial Conference might be the best conference, period, when you know, top to bottom, high level, you know, that type of thing. you know, if you did the math, and I don't know what the math formula would be, Mike, and that's why I teach history and not math, you know, so I don't do that stuff. But, you know, what is that like being at SCOTUS and having to compete with Kearney Catholic and Norfolk Catholic and Davis City Aquinas and Hastings St. Cecilia and all of the really, really good programs that you have to compete with on a yearly basis that you know your easy nights are still going to be, and I'm using air quotes on easy, Coach, those easy nights are still just going to be a knockdown, drag out fight. I mean, how does that affect your program? How does that make you better?
Well, it just makes you better coach knowing that you are going to have that kind of competition during your season. And isn't that what sports are all about? I mean, sports are about competing at a very high level, and to be able to give your kids that opportunity, that's really what it's all about. You know, it's not really about, you know, if you're coaching in it for yourself, then you're in it for the wrong reason. And, you know, it is fun as a coach to compete, obviously, with other coaches and the schools in our conference. And that's also very appealing. But the kid, you know, giving those kids the opportunity to compete, you know, it makes you a better coach. You have, it's sink or swim, basically, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you got to figure out ways how to beat Bishop Newman in their 1-3-1. And, you know, you have to figure out ways to beat Bergen in their 3-2 zone. And, you know, it's just different every night. And that's what makes it a great conference.
Yeah. Your job, it's unique. You know, how did you become a PGA professional golf instructor?
I was working here right after we got married, and I was just at the right place at the right time. And I started working at the Elks Country Club on the maintenance side, and then, you know, the pro shop had some guys leave, and I was just kind of in the right place at the right time. And I love golf. My dad was an assistant golf coach, so I've been playing golf since I was 6 years old, and really kind of just flourished from there. The membership at the Elks Country Club was a great group of people, and I love teaching the game of golf. Mm-hmm. And that part of it was just kind of fell into place.
Mm-hmm. How do you think? You know, golf is obviously it's a very individualistic sport, whereas basketball is reliant on four other people on the floor, and it's just continuous, it's flowing. You know, golf is just one step at a time, literally one step at a time. You know, how has your experiences as a golf instructor helped you with developing your program, developing your coaching skills? Even though, I mean, it'd be hard pressed to find two sports that are on the, you know, from the outside looking in, they're at the opposite end of the spectrum. But I'm sure there's got to be some correlation there for you.
The similarities are that your kids or your students learn differently. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what might work for one person might necessarily work for another. So teaching the sports, it's similar in that respect. So you got to figure out how does this kid respond the best? How does this kid respond the best? They are both skill driven, right? I mean, you have to have certain skill sets to succeed at both sports. And, you know, I think that's when you talk about multiple sport athletes and why they are so much more dynamic than just a one sport athlete. I think that's where that comes from. You the different skill sets that you need to be successful at different sports, you know, help you in all your sports. And so, you know, maybe the mental toughness side of the golf game makes you a better basketball player in that regard. And, you know, your hand-eye coordination in basketball obviously will help you with the hand-eye coordination it takes in golf. So, you know, at multiple sport athletes is where it's at, and golf and basketball are no different.
Yeah. I would think the mental part of it, like, you shank a shot in golf, Mike, and then you got to put it behind you as quickly as you can. I'm like, okay, I shanked it. This is where I am. This is how it is. I got to move on to the next shot here, and I got to work my way out of this, and I got to make the best shot that I can. You know, a lot of times in basketball, it's just next play, next play. What's our next play? Well, how do we get our next play going here? I imagine that would be one of the in my limited knowledge of golf, and some people would argue my limited knowledge of basketball as well. But you know, that to me would be kind of one of the top things that I think would be in common with the two sports.
Huge. That's one of our biggest things in our program, especially during games. You know, we all know these kids are going to make mistakes, and you just can't let that one mistake multiply into another one. And what's next is one of our biggest things that we tell these kids all the time.
Mm-hmm. What's it? You've got your son on staff with you. You know, and you've worked closely with your kids as they've gone, you know, as they played through the SCOTUS program. You know, what was that experience like, kind of helping them, you know, coaching them through the program? And now it's kind of come full circle. I was fortunate enough to coach with my son a couple of times, and I loved it. It was just awesome. He brought so many good things to the table, gave me different perspectives, new ways of thinking about things. But you know, what's that been like working with your son and having him on your staff with you?
It's been phenomenal. You know, my first assistant is Cody Marachek, and they were classmates, both graduated in 2017. And Cody was an awesome athlete, ended up running track at the university. And so having them both on staff has just really, it's been very rewarding for me as a person who has grown older. I'm not sure they enjoyed all the time that I was coaching them. but I think it's just been so rewarding for me to be able to reminisce a little bit as we coach these new kids, you know, the kids now. And but also, like you said, he brings a different viewpoint. Hey, you got to look at it this way. He's also one of those guys that holds me back, man. I'm not going to lie. I coach with my heart on my sleeve sometimes. And, you know, if a call doesn't go our way or whatnot, and I lose it, he's the first one grabbing my pocket saying, hey, hey, hey. So it's been very rewarding to have him on the staff with me. As fathers and sons, it just doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with you there. I mean, it's just, as they move into adulthood, you never know how much time you're going to have with your children as they grow and move on. And for me, I mean, the practice stuff or what, but for me, just the time that you get to be around them and do those things with them. That was the best part for me. I don't know about for you, Coach, but that for me was the best part.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Anytime you get to spend with them, they leave that bonus.
Yep. Let's talk about your team right now. You guys are off to a really, I don't want to say nice start. You've had a really nice season, I guess, at this point, because we're only a week or, you know, well, about a, you guys are about, a, you still have one more week of your regular season here. You've played a tough schedule. Like I said, the Centennial is one of the best conferences in the state. You've got a big game this afternoon here with Columbus Lakeview. So we're taping this on Saturday morning. We're getting a nice little soft snowfall here in Omaha. Sounds like it's the same thing in Columbus. But one of the things that I would think is driving your program and probably driving you individually, Coach, is getting back to Lincoln, bringing the Shamrocks back to the state tournament. I think it's correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's been since 2017, since SCOTUS has been down there. You know, how important is that to try and get your group back down to Lincoln here, you know, with this group and what's it going to take to get you there?
Dream. This group of seniors, I have six seniors, and this group of seniors, I started working with them when they started their seventh grade year. Mm-hmm. And I've been they're pretty much their primary coach the whole time, and that was always the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, we were playing playing in the Lincoln League and everything when they were in junior high. And then when March rolled around, we were going to the state tournament, and you know, that's where it starts. And that's been our goal. We've been fortunate enough the last 2 years to be able to play in district finals.
Uh-huh.
And it came up short both years. We had to play at Pierce 2 years ago against Bramer and the Shelton kid. And obviously Coach Emery is a very good coach, and he totally outcoached me, by the way, that night. Just a very humbling experience. And then last year, you know, we went through a spell where we lost 9 in a row last year and had to play at Concordia, and they were very talented as well, but actually held the lead at halftime. That's your goal, man. Your goal is to give these kids the opportunity to play in great atmosphere. So, you know, playing in a sub-final and then playing in a district final, I mean, those are the things that they're going to remember the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And then getting to Lincoln, right? The last time we've been there was when Tate and Cody were seniors, and that's their driving force as well. And we're doing our best to tell these, you know, to communicate to these kids how special that is. And you know, we're on the right track. We got to finish the season out and then get to the postseason.
If you had to pick out one or two things that you feel like, you know, these are going to be our keys to getting over that hump, to get through that district final and cutting down those nets, what do you feel like you need to do?
You know, always limit turnovers. You know, you got to make good decisions with basketball. We got a bunch of kids that are going to execute night in and night out. We're very confident in that. And then sharing the basketball with each other, that's mm-hmm. another big key for us. You know, being selfless and, you know, making that extra pass. Those are the keys. When we do those things, when we take care of the basketball, make good decisions, and then we share the basketball with each other, man, we're pretty tough.
Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Mike, let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk a little John Wooden here. We'll throw out the John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Van Cannon, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Yes, I am.
Okay. From page 114 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, I'll read this here, Mike, and then give you a couple seconds to pontificate over it here, and then tell me what you think. So the John Wooden quote of the day is, I can't remember if I said this, from page 114, a person in a position of leadership must make decisions. Making decisions is a tough job. Those under a leader can make suggestions. Making suggestions is an easy job. Everybody has a suggestion. Not everyone has a decision. Perhaps that's why there are so few leaders, at least good leaders.
Well, he's not wrong. Being a leader is not easy. And making hard decisions is difficult, obviously. But when you're talking about leading young men, I think the key to being a good leader is having relationships with the people that you're leading. It starts with your coach. I mean, if you have a great coaching staff, obviously your coaching staff is going to have suggestions all the time. Reaching the best solutions as a coaching staff is huge. And then communicating those decisions with the kids that you're coaching, you're going to have to rely on your relationship and honesty. And sometimes, you know, honesty with young kids these days is really tough. But as long as you're clear with the kids that you coach and the people that you lead, if honesty and trust are two-way streets, then you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's the key to being a good leader. And we've been fortunate, you know, we've had some rough goes at different parts of different seasons, and, you know, honesty two ways always works.
Yeah. And you know, coincidentally, you know, on the opening tip newsletter, one of the things I talked about was listening to your players, and a lot of times, and I think the quote unquote modern coaches is better at this than the old school type. But I think one of the things that has evolved in the game is it is important for coaches to listen to their players, and that helps with your leadership style. I really tried if a player came to me with something, I would try. You know, at the very least, I would definitely listen to them. Wouldn't always agree with them, but if it was possible, if I felt like, okay, this does not really affect winning or losing that much, and this is something that, hey, we could do this a dozen different ways, and it doesn't really matter. So if they want to do it this way, let's do it that way, and then that helps them with their buy-in and their ownership with the team, and I think that helped with developing relationships, and hopefully the kids seeing that, yeah, we do have a voice in the program here. And then there were times where we should have done it the player's way. I chose to do it my way, and I was wrong, and the kids were right. And when that happens, I think you just acknowledge it. Hey, you know what? I screwed this up. You guys are right. We're going to do it like this from here on out, or whatever it may be. I mean, I think those are important conversations that you have.
First year I was head coach at Scones, we went 4-19, and I was I was trying to prove points. Didn't play 1 minute of zone. We sacrificed a few wins because of it. But I was trying to make a point to my kids: if you can't play good man, it doesn't matter what defense you play; it's not going to be very good. And I also had it in my mind that, you know, you had to be super athletic to be a great basketball player and to contribute. And, you know, that's not true. And there were a couple kids that were juniors that first year, and I told them, you know what? I did this. I made these decisions because I believed this. I was wrong. And that led to the next year being really super successful, because we had a bunch of juniors that turned into seniors that next year. We went 17-9 and made a district final, and they bought in, and it was a together thing. And uh-huh. It started with me apologizing and admitting I was wrong and made a mistake. So
yeah,
that's a big thing in a program.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It is. Absolutely. So, Coach Van Cannon, let's jump into your basketball philosophy. What do you like to do? So forth and so on. You want to start offense or defense, Coach?
The most.
Okay.
obviously, my previous answer, you know, man to man is how you win in the Centennial Conference. It's just one of those deals, and we do a good job at SCOTUS of mixing. We have kids that are capable of running a little 1-3-1, and we mix it up a little bit. We also are athletic this year, so we do a little run and jump stuff too. But our base defense is man-to-man, help side. We try to force everything to the middle. So, you know, I'm kind of a pack line guy, and that's our calling card. That's our, you know, our cornerstone of the defensive side. Because and you guard as a team. That's the other thing. It's not really man-to-man. It's team defense. It's not easy. Let's put it that way. And it takes determination and mental toughness to play pretty good man defense.
When you say that, it's not easy. What do you mean by that, Coach?
So, you know, as you're guarding as a team, each guy has to take care of the guys they're guarding, you know, and then when you know, because the biggest thing about man that people don't understand sometimes is the ball scores. So if your guy is on the other side of the floor, you can't be over there. And that's the first part of guarding as a team. If you're more than two passes away from the basketball, you got to be in a position where you can help your teammates, because invariably somebody's going to get beat. You know, they have offensive philosophies and screens and passing and driving. Kids are better at driving and, you know, defending the three-point line. So it's very, very difficult to get guys connected and to guard as a team on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you break down your defensive philosophy in practice? What are some ways that you work it, you know, the whole part whole, or however you teach it? You know, how do you put it all together, Coach?
So we do rotations, and there are different drills. You break it down. We have 3-on-3 rotations. We have 4-on-4 rotations. You have 5-on-5 rotations. I mean, and the drills are endless. And you got to have different ways to do it so that, you know, you don't get monotonous during the season.
Mm-hmm.
But you start 3-on-3, then you can go to 4-on-4, and then you get to the 5-on-5 steps, and then everything starts to really kind of take shape. I think the biggest thing about guarding as a team is being able to close out correctly. Closeouts are the foundation of any defense. If you can't close out correctly, then you're always going to be in scramble mode, and you're just not going to see much success if you're always scrambling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How much time are you spending on your defense? You know, what percentage of practice are you spending on just your defensive philosophy?
We try to make it 40-50%. You know, I mean, that's how important it is. And you got to have that, you know. Yeah, if you can hold teams, you know, in the Centennial Conference, if you can hold teams under 40, I mean, that's you're winning. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're gonna at least be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a big part of our practice.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let's flip it on the other side of the ball here. Let's talk about your offensive philosophy and what you do there. What do you like to do? How do you, again, kind of the same thing that we talked about defensively. What do you like to do? Why do you like to do it? How do you implement it? How much time you spending on it? How are you breaking it down? You know, just answer those 7 or 8 questions in a perfect fashion, Mike, and we're going to be just fine here. So, what do you got going on there?
So we are big proponents of freedom. I mean, we love to give these kids the freedom to make decisions offensively. Running sets and patterned offenses are awesome, but they also create robots. Mm-hmm. And you don't want robots on the basketball floor because, you know, to be more effective, be the most effective offensively, all 5 guys on the floor, obviously working together, but all 5 guys on the floor have to know that if they have a guy that they can beat off the dribble, or, you know, the IQ part comes in, you got to have the freedom to do that. So we're big into motion, and then how you teach it depends on what kind of motion and what you want, and then taking advantage of the skill sets of the guys that you're coaching. Your kids are going to dictate what kind of sets and motions work best for them. So you know, right now we have the ability to go three out, two in, and we have the ability to run stuff that's five out, four out, one in. But we're big on freedom. And with freedom comes responsibility. And then that's where the IQ start stuff picks up with spacing and ideas like that. So when we teach that in practice, again, you start with short-sighted games, right? Two on two, three on three, four on four. And then you get into your five on five situations. So you have to really start small and build into that five on five stuff. And we do a pretty good job of that, I think, but it really starts in the summer, Marty. And that's when you start implementing the things that you're going to want to do.
Yeah. You know, what are some ways that you communicate that responsibility? Like, hey, Billy and Frank can take the identical, literally the identical shot in two consecutive possessions. But when Billy takes it, it's not a good shot. But when Frank takes it, it's a good shot. You know, so you've got that freedom. You're appreciating. And I definitely, coach, as I grew more seasoned and experienced, we don't use the O word on a pen and a napkin. We say seasoned and experienced. As I became more seasoned and experienced, I gave more and more and more freedom, but with that responsibility. But sometimes you got to kind of walk that tightrope of, hey, Frank, great shot. Billy, let's move that one more pass or whatever, maybe. How do you communicate that? How do you teach that with your kids there at SCOTUS?
You know, in your program, and this is where relationships come back into play, because everybody has to be self-aware and understand what their role is. And, you know, Jay Billis has this great quote. I stole this with, you know, your role isn't who you are. It's just what you have to do to make your team win. Mm-hmm. That's what your team needs you to do to win. Some people are good shooters. Some people aren't. And, you know, if you know that Billy is a better shooter than you and he is open, then we're going to try to get him the basketball. And when I'm open, I'm going to use that opportunity to maybe pump fake and drive. So, you know, your relationships with the kids are, that's where that is going. You got to make sure everybody understands what they're good at and what they don't do so well. That helps with their decision-making, especially when you give them freedom on the offensive side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America, Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through, COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court. Coach, let's talk about your practice setup. And we talked a little bit about kind of the time that you spend on defense there and putting your whole philosophy together. But, you know, what's a typical practice look like at SCOTUS?
I mean, and it starts with the coaches. You know, we when I set up the practice plan, it's to the minute. And you know, I'm a big guy. I'm a big believer, and I try to. You do a 6 to 15 minute session, and you try to alternate offensive and defense because, in my mind, that replicates what you're doing in a game. You're on offense, then you're on defense. You're on offense, then you're on defense. And so, you know, we'll start out with rotations, and then the next time, you know, then we might do a 3-on-3 offensive competitive game. And then you're going into, you know, in the season, then you start putting together your defensive, scout and your defensive plan, how you're gonna, defend the team that you're gonna play next, and then then the next session is offense. Okay, this is what we're gonna try and take advantage on them offensively. To keep it high energy, most of our sessions are 6 to 10, 11 minutes, depending on what the drill is or what we're trying to accomplish. But that keeps the pace of practice going. And it makes the kids focus. They have to focus each and every session because each and every session is different. And that's what they have to do, when they're playing in the game. That's how the flow goes.
Yep. How do you kind of chop that up? In the sense of, do you do your defense first? Are you a defensive guy first? Do you do a lot of your fundamental work early? When do you fit in your 5-on-5 type of stuff? How do you chop that all up, Mike?
At what point of the season? This point of the season, you don't spend too much time on fundamentals this time of the year. Your time now is more on prep time. And so, I'm going to probably start defensively. See, I think I got a practice plan right here, actually. Like, just kind of tell you, it's normal. So, yesterday we went the first 3 minutes, we do defensive slides. And then, then we do a full court fast break type of drill for about 5 minutes, and then we're doing a probably a 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 defensive rotation drill. And then we probably throw in a post guard breakdown, where we separate posts and guards and then start working on the skills that, that we're going to use, in the next upcoming game and then how that's going to fit into our 5-on-5 stuff that we're going to do later on in practice.
Yeah, and it's that balance, especially at this point of the year, and you referenced it earlier, you've got to work on those same concepts, but you've got to do it in a different way so it seems like it's fresh for the kids and they're bringing that energy and it's just a change up, but they don't realize that, we're still working on closeouts here, or we're still working on our pressure defense here, or whatever it may be. That's such a key part to putting together practice plans as the season goes along. I always believe that anyway.
And this time of year, lessons. Yeah. Very rarely do we go past 90 minutes this time of year, yesterday's we did slides, we did a full court shooting drill. We had post guard where our posts were working on our pick and roll stuff that we're going to use. Then we had 4-on-4 rotations with the point of communication. Then we went into our Butler, our ball screen offense, high, low, especially running up against a shot clock situation. Then we did 4-minute games. We had a 4-minute game where it was all competition. It was game like situations, so that that's how you attack it. And then, after that, that's when you start breaking down. Okay, this is what they do on baseline on a pass plays. This is what these are their favorite sets. And then you actually defend them. So the kids, it's kind of like we try to give our kids the answers to the test before they take it, in our mind as coaches, that gives them the best opportunity to be successful.
How much has the shot clock changed your practice philosophy at all? Or if it hasn't,
Because now, you're not going to have, there were certain teams in our class that, if they got a lead, they were going to, they didn't have to release the basketball. And, I just think it makes the game flow. End of halves. And of course, obviously end of games, it makes a big, that's where it comes into play the most. But I think what the shot clock has really done is it has made our kids have to understand game situations better. And they've had to increase their IQ to handle those situations. And, it's burned us a couple times this season where we didn't realize that, hey, we had the ball with 19 seconds left and we took the first open look, where, you know, you kind of want to, you know, in those situations, you want that last shot so that they don't get the ball back.
I think the biggest way that it's changed things is the end of games. You know, instead of, okay, you're up 8 or you're down 8 with 5 minutes left to go, instead of having to worry about, okay, are they going to go delay or should we go delay, that type of stuff. You know, we still got to play basketball here. And I think that's been the biggest benefit of having the shot clock in place, in my opinion. I mean, you know, now I haven't coached with it, so I can't say for certain, you know, that's exactly what it is, but that's from what I've seen in games. That's what I see. I don't know. How about you, Mike?
I love it because it makes people play for 32 minutes. You know, you don't get to shorten the game anymore. And, you know, I think that's probably the biggest benefit. And that benefits everybody, in my opinion. It fosters better competition.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's kind of finish up here, Coach, talking about culture. And, again, you know, if you're not from Nebraska, you're not as familiar with Columbus SCOTUS. It's probably, especially at the small school level, one of the most well-rounded activities and athletic schools in the state. And you have a saying there, the SCOTUS way, and you know, there's a lot of teams that say, you know, fill in the blank way, or whatever. But you know, it kind of feels like, you know, especially from the outside looking in, that that's kind of a that is taken more seriously perhaps at SCOTUS than it is at a lot of places, and the importance of that culture that you have there in your community, and you know, just everything that goes into it. And you know, so talk a little bit about the SCOTUS way, the building of that culture, and just how it affects everything that you guys do there at Columbus SCOTUS.
Obviously, SCOTUS Central Catholic, the foundation of our institution, is faith. You know, we are a very tight-knit, faith-filled community. We have three parishes here in Columbus, and you know, faith, service, and gratitude. I mean, that's the SCOTUS way, and that everything else falls under that umbrella, and you know, all of our activities follow that in some way or shape or form, and basketball is no different. The biggest advantage, you know, the culture, I'm not going to say it's built in, but you know, we have three elementary schools, which is almost unheard of anymore in a town of our size.
Yep.
And so these kids get brought up, in a education system and a situation where, you know, faith is first and then it's family. And then, you know, they get a great education because our teachers are phenomenal. And so as they progress through the elementary schools and then they get to SCOTUS and junior high and senior high, that faith foundation is pretty solidly built. And then you build everything else off of that. The second year, I needed something to tie everything together with our basketball kids and family. That's what we are. We're an extension of your family at home. And then you're in an extension of your faith family, and then your school family, and then ultimately the basketball kids. We are our own family. And
yeah.
The thing I love about family is all families are different. They all have disagreements. All families have problems that they have to work through. All families love each other. And that's huge for us. And the basketball program especially. It's about the family type situation. All my kids, I'm a huge guy. I'm a touch guy. If you give somebody five or you're touching kids, you know, during the day and practice and whatnot, you know, that hand to hand touch, you know, it's just a sign that you love them and you care about them. And I foster that between the kids too, because you don't have to get along with everybody you play with, but you sure have to respect them. And, you know, that's where your, You know, that's where the love and the culture of SCOTUS comes back into play. And our faith foundation is a big part of that. So that's kind of how it works.
What do you do anything that you feel like, Coach, is specific to your team, to your program, that helps emphasize the culture of the school? You're taking that school, but here's something else that we do on top of that is just that's just unique to the boys basketball program.
I give every kid five before practice starts. I'm always giving them five. I'm always on time. That's when I get to say, hey, that was cool today. Piggyback onto that, when the junior high kids are playing or when the reserve team is playing, we are the varsity, if it's done, if it's able to be done, all of our older kids are required to go watch those games. It's so important to give back. And because all of these kids at some point or another were junior high kids or little kids, we took one day where where fifth and sixth grade teams were playing in a tournament here in Columbus, and we all went and watched them play. So, you know, that's probably one of those things that we do here at SCOTUS that I don't know everybody does. But that's how you build. That's how you build relationships with the young kids. I mean, I remember growing up, I had a guy, his name was Alan Ingebrigtsen, and he was probably one of the best corner three shooters I've ever seen in my entire life since at Storm Lake. And I can remember watching him practice and play. And those things matter. That's good.
Well, he was no Toby Kamis, but I'm sure he was good. So
we will like
Storm Lake. Toby wasn't well liked at a lot of places because he was pretty dang good athlete. So hey, great place, great place. So it all comes back to the old school Lakes Conference and Tornadoes versus Orabs versus you're not gonna if you're from Iowa, you know this. You know, we had midgets in the conference, the Esterville Midgets and the Spencer Tigers, and you were still in the Lakes when the Sibley Ocheden Generals were still in the Lakes, I believe. So. Yeah,
then we had the Cherokee Indians and the Emmitsburg Ehawks.
Yep.
Nobody liked Emmitsburg.
Well, that's because they kicked everybody's butt in football, though, too. So, yeah, a little Dwayne Twait for you there. So, great stuff this morning, Mike, and I appreciate it, especially on a game day, you taking the time to talk here. If folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how can they find out about it?
Email me. mvungannon@scotus.org.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Coach, I wish you nothing but the best down the stretch here. I appreciate your time. You know, I hope this has been a good experience here on A Pen and a Napkin.
Great experience, and I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Listening to it and then following along.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, if you could hold the line here just a second, Mike, I'd appreciate that. Again, Mike Vuncannon, the head boys basketball coach at Columbus SCOTUS here in Columbus, Nebraska, a suburb of Bellwood, Nebraska. That's what Columbus is. So we want to thank COSAC Chiropractic again for being our founding sponsor. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. Download, rate, review, again, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all of those good things. Please do that. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. A Pen and a Napkin. com. A lot of good stuff. We've got our coaches clinic coming up here April the 12th. We've got our varsity prep academy for girls basketball players coming up in May, and there's just more and more stuff here that I just got in the hopper here. You know, when you not only when you're not coaching, but then you have a student teacher, and so like I literally have like my entire day, other than checking in on my student teacher, making sure that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. I've just got this free reign right now, and I am going to take full advantage of it and have a good time with it. So I hope folks appreciate that. Check out the opening tip newsletter. Just came out with that, this week. So a lot of good stuff going on there with a pen and a napkin. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.